Washington Week, news and analysis. I'm Neil Strausser, CBS News, reporting on the CBS Radio Network.
I will not resign if indicted. I will not resign if indicted.
It was an angry vice president taking his stand at the end of a week of maneuvering that absorbed this capital. On Tuesday, there was the formal Justice Department announcement of the decision to begin presenting evidence about alleged kickbacks from Maryland contractors to a federal grand jury, and Spiro Agnew's immediate surprise visit to the leadership of the House of Representatives. By letter then read to the full House, which would be the prosecuting body in the event of an impeachment trial, the vice president asking for a full inquiry of the charges, saying that the Constitution bars other criminal proceedings against him and that news leaks had made it impossible to get a fair hearing from the grand jury. Speaker Carl Albert deliberated, and the next day, over some Republican protests, delivered the verdict.
The vice president's letter relates to matters before the courts. In view of that fact, I will not take any action on the letter at this time.
Democrat James O'Hara explained in more partisan terms.
No man's above the law in this country, including the vice president. And he's desperately trying to avoid prosecution by involving the House of Representatives in the matter prematurely.
On Saturday, the vice president shot back.
When I see principal news organs of this country criticize my going to the House of Representatives on the basis that I am attempting to hide behind a constitutional shield and suppress the facts, that enrages me, because what I want is not a suppression of the facts, but the fullest possible hearing of them, widely publicized before the people of the American nation, so that they will know exactly what is going on in this case. I am not trying to hide anything.
The forum was the convention of the National Federation of Republican Women meeting in Los Angeles. By that time, the vice president had suffered a second setback, failing, for the time being at least, to halt the grand jury proceedings. And it quickly became clear that Agnew now was determined to carry his fight not only to the federal courts, but to the court of public opinion as well. He read through a prepared text, then launched out.
I want to say at this point, clearly and unequivocally, I am innocent of the charges against me. I have not used my office nor abused my public trust as county executive, as governor, or as vice president to enrich myself at the expense of my fellow Americans.
Agnew charged that some Justice Department officials, stung, he said, by the ineptness of their Watergate prosecutions, were out to get him.
And they are trying to recoup their reputation at my expense. I'm a big trophy. And let me say further that one of those individuals has made some very severe mistakes, serious mistakes, in the handling of his job. He considers himself a career professional in a class by himself, but a recent examination of his record will show not only that he failed to get any of the information out about the true dimensions of the Watergate matter, but that he also, through ineptness and blunder, prevented the successful prosecution of high crime figures because of wiretapping errors. Those are the reasons why he needs me to reinstate his reputation as a tough and courageous and hard-nosed prosecutor. Well, I'm not going to fall down and be his victim, I assure you.
The words seemed clearly aimed at Henry Peterson, Assistant Attorney General in charge of the Criminal Division. As for the charges against him, said Agnew, they came from persons who sought to save themselves by implicating someone higher up.
Because small and fearful men have been frightened into furnishing evidence against me, they have perjured themselves in many cases, it's my understanding. I will not resign if indicted. I will not resign if indicted.
Looking back on this week of maneuvering, our CBS News Justice Department correspondent, Fred Graham.
It was a week in which Agnew unveiled the basic strategy that will unfold in the coming weeks and months. First came his effort to move the case into the House of Representatives, the effort that has been stalled, if not stopped. Then Agnew asked the presiding judge in his case, Walter Hoffman of Norfolk, Virginia, to halt the grand jury investigation and to forbid any indictment of him so long as he is vice president. Agnew gave two reasons for these actions. One is the constitutional argument that the separation of powers prevents the courts from moving against a sitting vice president. He says he's immune from prosecution unless and until he is removed from the vice presidency by impeachment proceedings in Congress. The second is Agnew's claim that the Justice Department has poisoned the jurors' minds by a series of what he says are news leaks calculated to drive him from office and convict him of crimes. The Justice Department branded that charge patently ridiculous. But then Agnew added an element that could make this one of the most agonizing chapters of American history, that he will remain in office and fight it out even if he is indicted. This poses the distinct possibility that within a few weeks the United States could find itself for the first time with a sitting vice president who is under criminal indictment, a situation that could last several months while Agnew's two legal arguments go to the Supreme Court for a decision as to whether the vice president could be brought to trial. Fred Graham, CBS News, Washington.
Partly because of the Agnew developments, the resumed Senate Watergate hearing seemed to pale imitation of what went before. Partly also, it may have been an impression that the public appetite has been sated. And the committee was also moving into the less dramatic dirty tricks area with jailed Watergate burglar E. Howard Hunt as the bridge. Hunt added little beyond a statement that former White House aide Charles Colson knew in advance of an overall political intelligence plan, but not, to Hunt's knowledge, of the Watergate break-in plan. And if Democrats had hoped to tie dirty tricks to the overall White House political strategy, they got little satisfaction from the next witness, Patrick Buchanan, presidential speechwriter and author of the strategy that concentrated first on weakening Senator Muskie. They got, in fact, more of a lesson in combative practical politics, with Buchanan snapping that he would do anything that was not immoral, unethical, illegal, or unprecedented, he said, in previous Democratic campaigns. He conceded he had wanted a prankster similar to the Democrats' Dick Tuck and offered a dirty tricks definition at one point, posed in Tuck terms.
I think you can cross the line in terms of numbers. In other words, you have one Dick Tuck or two Dick Tucks or three Dick Tucks. Okay, but suppose you field about 100 of them out there. The cumulative impact of these kind of disruptions could have such an effect as to deny a candidate really the right to communicate with the American people and so foul up his operations as to really deny him his legitimate right.
The full Senate, meanwhile, spent the week debating the multi-billion-dollar defense procurement bill, deciding for, then against, a hefty troop reduction in Europe, and deciding by two votes to push on with the most expensive of the weapon systems, the Trident missile-launching submarine. It was an administration victory balanced by a House Ways and Means Committee vote to deny favored nation trade status to the Soviet Union until it allows free exit by its citizens. On Friday, President Nixon was trying to explain that to Soviet Foreign Minister Gromyko. On Saturday, he was talking of Western alliance problems with Chancellor Brandt of West Germany. A diplomatic flurry that gave point to Secretary of State Kissinger's observation when he took possession of his new office for the first time. His neat desk, he said, would never be that way again. The Washington Week was produced by Ellen Wadley. I'm Neil Strausser, CBS News.